You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. He is Anthony Pusick. How are you, sir?
Donnie, what's going on? How you doing?
Well, felt like everybody that needed to win won last night, right? I mean, the Devils got that 7-2 win, seven unanswered goals against San Jose. Jack Hughes gets, he gets a goal. He sure had 4 points on the night. Got to beat San Jose. They did. That was a big win for Philadelphia over Tampa.
Oh, yeah.
That was needed. You know, Detroit, you know,
knock the lights out.
Keeps pace, puts up a touchdown and a 2-point conversion on the Washington Capitals. So that was a team that needed to win but didn't. But, you know, Detroit was able, you know, to get the win. Pittsburgh beats Vancouver as Vancouver continues their bit of a slide here. So that was a huge win for both the Devils and the Penguins beginning their West Coast trips. Pittsburgh out in Western Canada while the Devils are out on the West Coast of this country. And, you know, so a lot of teams able to keep pace, you know, with the Flyers winning over the Lightning. So kind of everything kind of stabilized, I guess, a little bit with the exception of Washington's loss. So everybody kind of gets up a bit of a tick to take advantage of, I guess, now if you want to set your sights on the final wild card with Tampa having it. I still think those other teams on the outside in the Metropolitan Division's best chances to finish third. But, you know, some craziness in the Eastern Conference with teams that needed to win. The majority of them did. The Islanders had that big overtime win against the Stars on Monday. So here's where we're at. I mean, Detroit's proving to you that they're a legit playoff team. As a matter of fact, if Toronto's not careful, if they could fall to the wild card because of Detroit. Detroit's only 2 points back of Toronto for third place in the Atlantic Division. So Tampa's got that last wild card spot after their loss 69. So the Devils are 5 back of Tampa for the wild card and third place in the Metropolitan Division. And then you've got Washington, even with their loss, 63 points. So they're 6 back. Pittsburgh is 7 back, but they've got the games in hand, Anthony. 5 games in hand on Tampa because they've only played 56 games. It's ridiculous. And they've got 4 games in hand on Philadelphia. So Pittsburgh, that was a huge win. We'll see what they do against Edmonton and a resurging Calgary team. So that's still a really tough trip for Pittsburgh. And that and the Islanders with 62 points, they've got 58 points. So they've got 3 games in hand on Tampa. So it's still very, very much wide open, Anthony. And I think the trade deadline is going to be so interesting. What does Washington do? I mean, are they going to try to go for it or are they kind of just settle in? I think they're better off just settling in. The Devils, there's a lot of conversation about Soros, but the question is, will Nashville make a deal since they're in the playoffs? And they said they're going to not make a deal as long as they're in the playoffs. And right now, they've got
credit.
The second wild card, 5 points ahead of Calgary. So I don't think Nashville is going to be trading their number one goaltender while they're actually in the playoffs on February 28th.
I'd like to think that I started the Soros rumors, and I think that, you know, I was in Barry Trotz's ear telling him that this could be a good idea for him. But no, look, you've got Nashville on a 6-game win streak, and you've got Calgary on a 4-game win streak. Calgary's 5 points behind Nashville in the wild card with a game in hand. And you take a look at these two teams and think these are two teams that have so many expiring contracts and contracts you think they can move that would help teams that are trying to take that next step in, whether it be their wild card race or their division race, to take a step forward. And you know Calgary already made the move with Lindholm, and they really haven't missed a beat. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Nashville is, as we said, in the driver's seat for the 8th spot in the West right now. Why would you move on from Soros unless you truly believe, as EJ said, that the kid down in Milwaukee is ready to go, that they used a first-round pick on, and whose name's escaping me right now, starts with an A, but we'll get there. It's tough because there are, as you said, there's such a logjam in the East, Don, and everybody's kind of looking to improve, and the only teams that I could see being true sellers at the moment right now are Seattle, Anaheim. It looks like Adam Henrique is pretty much all but ready to be traded. I believe David Pagnotta had that today on X, that it's not a matter of if but when for him, and they will most likely retain some salary. That could be an interesting name for the Rangers. Does Buffalo move on from anybody, or do they kind of retool a little bit? Does Montreal have any assets that would be worthwhile to move on from? Columbus, you know, teams that are completely out of it are going to be able, are where these teams are going to be looking, but, you know, the top two goalies that would have been available are Markstrom and Saros. Doesn't look like they're going to be going anywhere anytime soon. So a team that needs a goaltender like the Devils, like Carolina, I don't think they're going to get it, or at least get the quality of goalie they thought they were going to get about a week or two ago.
Yeah, it doesn't look that way. I don't know what's going to happen with Calgary. If I'm Nashville, I'm not doing a thing. I mean, I still think that there's something to making the playoffs, and who knows what you can end up doing. You know, Forsberg gets hot and starts scoring goals. Evangelista's been good for them. They have a nice, well-rounded team. I don't think they're going to go far. That's the rub, right? Is that, is any of these teams going to beat a Vancouver? Any of these teams going to beat a Vegas, beat a Winnipeg, a Dallas, a Colorado? But if you draw Vancouver in the first round, Anthony, and this Vancouver team starting to get exposed a little bit, you know, maybe Nashville feels, hey, I'll take my chance with anybody. But the West is so top-heavy. I think that Central Division is so interesting. With Winnipeg's win last night, they are in first place with 79. Because Dallas lost to Colorado. Colorado with a 5-1 win. I was watching that on ESPN Plus. That was a fun broadcast. That is going to be such an interesting race, because winning that division is going to be so vitally important. Like, I don't think it's as important in the East, but in the West, boy, that's a big difference of being able to win the Central Division. And yeah, listen, they're still in the conversation to win the West. I mean, right now Winnipeg is only 4 points back of Vancouver. But you're getting Los Angeles or the Predators or the Flames or the Blues or whatever, as opposed to maybe having to face Dallas and Colorado if you end up dropping to second or third. Like, that's a big deal to me, Anthony. So this Central Division out West is going to be just a lot of fun to watch, and how they play against each other is going to be big. And that was a tough loss for Dallas last night.
I can't say that the Central 2-3 matchup is going to be the most exciting in the first round of the playoffs, because at the moment, if the season ended today, we have Boston-Toronto in the Atlantic 2-3, so that would be number one. But you want to talk about the two matchups that you'd probably see on primetime, and I know that it's not sexy to say, yeah, we're going to put Dallas-Winnipeg on, like, you know, at night. But you know what? That those are between Winnipeg, Dallas, and Colorado. That's well, any three of them, I think, could go seven with each other. I think it'd be exciting games, and I would love to see it. If I had to pick a team right now that I think is going to win that division, and I know that they have the least games played, so it's obvious, but I just think Winnipeg all around is pretty well rounded. I like Hellebuck. I like their top line scoring. I think that they're deep. The addition of Monahan has obviously been helpful for them. They're plus 41 goal differential, 4-game win streak right now. They did have that little dip when Scheifele was hurt, but now he's back. I think that's huge for them. He needs to be healthy in order for them to play as well as they can. But I could see any of those three teams coming out of the Central. You could tell me that Dallas is going to beat Colorado, I'd say I agree. You could tell me Dallas is going to beat Winnipeg, vice versa, for all three. Those three probably have the least discrepancy between them, which is what makes that division so interesting.
Well, the 2-3 matchups, which we always hate because of this new format, is you don't want to see a possible cup contender get bounced in the first round because they're meeting another cup contender. You don't have that in the Metropolitan Division. Philadelphia is not a cup contender. Carolina is. So if Philadelphia beats Carolina, that's on the Hurricanes. All right. Boston-Toronto is interesting. Can Toronto win a cup? Right now, I don't believe so. Boston certainly can, but you go to the Central, Dallas, Colorado, Colorado, Winnipeg, Winnipeg, Dallas, any of those three teams I think are capable of winning a cup.
I agree.
One of them is going to be out in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas, Edmonton. Vegas obviously can win the cup they won last year. I'm not ready to put Edmonton there.
I'm not either.
Because Edmonton's got 70 points, and that's with a 16-game winning streak. So do I think they're a nice team? Do I think they're a dangerous team with the right deal? And I heard they're in competition, believe it or not, even though Skinner's playing well, to possibly add depth in goal and possibly put in a position for that depth goaltender to maybe steal the job away from Skinner. But that's not a cup contender to me.
But that's a more viable market right now, Don, than that top flight goaltender. Edmonton's in a good position where if they feel comfortable with Skinner, but they want to just make a little bit of a competition, a lot better than the situation that Carolina or the Devils are in, where it's like, we really need a goaltender to push us to the next level. Unless Anderson comes back and plays well for Carolina.
And again, Anderson is getting closer, but we'll have to see. He hasn't hit the ice yet, facing shots, and we're already
in
March.
That's important.
But, you know, there's still 25-plus games left in the regular season, and Anderson is a veteran, so it's not like he's going to need a ton of work before we do get to the playoffs. So,
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The trade deadline, which is coming up on March 8th, so we're still a little over a week away.
I'm excited.
You know, a lot's going to happen. But I think right now the teams to watch, because I don't think Nashville's going to do anything as long as they're in the playoffs, all right? What is Calgary going to do? 5 points out of a playoff spot in the wild card, 7 back at third place in the Pacific Division. They've got assets, as you said. The Blues, are they going to cut bait with Buchnevich, or are they going to try to make it? Minnesota, same thing. Now I'm going to cut it off. Seattle, I think, is cooked. Arizona, I think, is cooked.
Oh, yeah.
So Calgary, St. Louis, Minnesota, they've got to make decisions. And in the East, I think
everybody other than Buffalo down.
Buffalo, yeah, I mean, Buffalo is interesting because they do have assets. I mean, do they want to see this through? I mean, they've got 58 points. They've been playing pretty decently, but you're still talking 11 back of the wild card. And they sit, I got to say the Islanders, and even the Islanders and. The Islanders are still going to be in it, but I want to see what happens over the next couple of games. Pittsburgh, because of the games in hand, they're going to be an interesting team. Let's just see the Pittsburgh schedule here quick, when they're going to be getting all of these makeup games and who they're going to play. Obviously, they're on they're in Western Canada. They beat the best team.
They have a back to back over the weekend.
You know, and that's usually how it goes with the battles. Of Alberta. So they've got, they got to go to Seattle before they do that.
Yes.
So an excellent chance to win there. And then they head to March. And as you said, the back-to-back games that they have
a lot
to play
of
against Calgary and Edmonton.
They have back-to-backs a lot. Back-to-back weekends, they have back-to-backs. Bruins, and then home against the Oilers on the 9th and 10th. And then they play the Rangers and the Red Wings at home on the 16th and 17th.
But that's what it gets interesting, okay? Because now when they come back from the trip, they're home against Columbus and home against Washington.
Those should be wins,
so
you would think.
You would think if you fancy yourself a playoff team, those are wins. And then that takes us, that game against Washington is on the eve of the deadline. So where are they after that Washington game? So they've got a grand total of 6 games before the deadline. So they've got a load of games.
Yes, they do.
Coming up over the next little bit, like 8 days. So they're basically playing every other day. So we'll get a better picture. But looking at their schedule, they should be able to beat Seattle, say get 2 points in Alberta, and get 4 points against Columbus and Washington. So what is that? 2, 4, 6, that gives them 8 points. If we did our math correctly, and that gets them to 70, and now that
just
could
depends
be
on where
enough.
Everybody else is,
but right.
They're close.
But that could be enough to where maybe they leapfrog over Washington and New Jersey, and now it depends on what Tampa and Philadelphia do.
You know,
so they might find themselves only 4 or 5 points out of a playoff spot, and they're not making a deal. They're going to buy. They're not selling. So. But what that does is what kind of pressure does it put on the other teams? Like if you're the Islanders and you see Pittsburgh blow by, you already open up the gap with you, and they look like they're a contender. New Jersey, even though they're on the West Coast, you know, still winnable games against the Ducks, certainly, you know, already beat San Jose. The Islanders could end up, I don't know if they have anything to sell, but I don't know if they're going to be buying if they're sitting there 6 points out of a playoff spot at the deadline. So,
well, I keep seeing Brock Nelson's name floating out there, and maybe that's just Twitter. kind of just thinking about what
somebody
could
called the K Show saying Igor Shesterkin for Brock Nelson.
Yeah, no, I saw that guy. He made his own account after that, so he got his
did
money.
He really?
Yeah, he got his money. I think it was Nelson for Igor.
Oh, nice.
And then he said, "You could bring Pierre Engvall in there for Zibanejad." So he really has gotten some run out of that call. Wow. I'm sure he's proud of himself. But I do wonder what assets they view as not part of the long term future, and who they would be willing to part with in order to look towards the future if they were thinking that this. And now remember, we were 2 or 3 weeks removed now from Lou saying that he believes this team is a playoff team, and I believe he said it in a pregame about a week ago. While they were kind of on this skid here. So Patrick Waugh is going to be the guy going forward, and you'd have to assume he is. I can't imagine that he came in as a renegade to finish out this year. I'm sure he has some opinions on certain guys on this team and who he thinks could be big contributors going forward and who can get moved on from. I don't think they're going to make a deal to make a deal. Lou doesn't really do that. It's going to be an asset that's going to benefit them in the long haul.
Yeah.
And the thing, Don, I know we've talked about it, and you think that the Penguins can make that eighth spot. The problem I have with the Penguins and the Capitals is they're so streaky. And it's okay to be streaky, but the main issue I have with their streakiness is it kind of seems like they get streaky and they don't figure it out. Like when the Rangers go on a streak, or when the Bruins go on a streak, or the Winnipeg Jets go on a streak, any of these top teams we've seen that have been in our top five, that have been top 10 in the league all year, they seem to hit their stride and then they keep it for a consistency for more than just a week. Feels like the Penguins look like that team from 3 or 4 years ago that were one of the best teams in hockey, and their offense looks great, and yeah, maybe they'll give up a couple goals here and there. Same thing with Washington, but then they'll go on a week and a half stretch where they're under 500 or barely 500, and with where they are in the standings, that's not going to get it done. They're going to have to play a little more consistently.
Well, like I said, we've got 6 games before the deadline. Let's see what we do. We think they potentially have 8 of the 12 points they can get. Let's see if they get them. And if they do, I think that they can be a legitimate contender moving forward. But you're right. I mean, we're sitting here, you know, they can go out there and sweep Western Canada, come back and lose to Columbus and Washington at home and completely change the narrative. But they're in position. Crosby had another couple of points last night, so he's playing out of his mind. They have at least put themselves in the conversation. We'll see where they go from there. All right, let's hear from you. We didn't get a chance to do that back on Monday. A lot of people on social media, including Neil, who asks a pretty general question. With so many European players in the league now, why don't you think we have any European coaches in the league? Do you think that they aren't good enough? Surely would be worth a try rather than getting the same old coaches. Well, Hlinka was the coach. That's going back a decade ago in Pittsburgh. So we've had European coaches. Kekalainen was the general manager in Columbus. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. Is it a case of communication? Like, you'd have to find a European coach that is bilingual. So that means they have to be very, very fluent in English to be able to talk to the media, depending on what market they're going to be in, communicating with the players and all that, and also a desire to do it. But I think we're getting to the chance that there could be more. Anthony, I don't think there's a bias against it. It just, I don't really even see that many assistants. But
no.
There's been on occasion, but not the much of an influx. And I haven't really seen any complaint about it. So maybe it's just a case of they don't have an appetite for it. But it is kind of interesting with the amount of Russian, Swedish, Finnish players that we have. That there's not as many coaches.
And look, and I don't, you know, I don't follow the KHL and the Swiss leagues as religiously as others do, especially people that are looking for prospects. But you see some former NHL coaches that are over there, and you see, who's getting success there? Patrick Waugh was over there. Mike Keenan, as we know, was there for a very long time.
Yeah.
I don't know, Don. I wonder if now that there's going to be the return to the Olympics and you're going to keep an eye on these World Junior teams and things of that nature, are you going to see teams take a look at, hey, this guy's developing young talent very well, or this guy seemed to manage to get Latvia farther than anybody expected. Maybe we should give him a look. I think you're right about maybe there's a language barrier issue. I'm not saying that you have to speak English. Obviously, there's a lot of broken French in the National Hockey League, Russian, of course, and as you said, the European nations. But I think there's also just a comfort level from these upper management places. I mean, like you said, there's not a whole lot of European front office people where they would go to those those leagues and say, hey, who can we grab from here to, and it's a lot of the time these teams play on a different ice surface. It's a little bigger. International ice is bigger.
Yeah, that's part of it too. Are they equipped to coach the NHL style when a lot of them have been bred in, from a coaching standpoint at least, the international style, which is
quite different.
It's a
fair question and a good one.
But also, if you get a guy that's played 15 years in the NHL and wants to be a coach, I don't think you have to worry about the international stuff if he's played on the NHL level. If, you know, Sergei Fedorov all of a sudden wanted to be a coach, I wouldn't think that would apply to him. You know, if Matt Sundin wanted to be a head coach, I don't think that would apply to him. You know, but maybe somebody that was bred from the international system coming over here that never played on the NHL level, that could be a bit of an issue. But, yeah, I think that day could possibly come. Thomas says, do you see the Rangers paying Igor Shesterkin another big contract once it expires soon? By the way, it expires at the end of next season. Take away the Vezina year, one could argue he's been inconsistent and streaky, to say the least. Well, you don't take away the Vezina trophy. He's playing out of his mind right now. So let's say he continues to play out of his mind the rest of this year and the Rangers make a run. They may extend him at the end of this year, or they might wait and then see how he plays next year.
Now, what does that look like is another question.
Go up to $8 million,
$6 million, $7 million?
I do not have an appetite at all to pay big time money for a goaltender. I don't. I think it's an important position. You know, and you can say it's worked out for Tampa with Vasilevsky because he's on his way to the Hall of Fame. But I've seen too many Darcy Kempers win Stanley Cups and all that to say that it's something I got to fall over myself for. I mean, Alexander Georgiev can win a Stanley Cup this year. Ottinger can win a Stanley Cup. You look at the favorites right now, you know, Demko in Vancouver. You look at the elite goaltenders in the league, you know, Connor Hellebuck certainly is a Vezina Trophy winner. Igor's won a Vezina Trophy. Vasilevsky's won a Vezina Trophy. But otherwise, you're looking at a lot of goaltenders that have been on deep runs in the playoffs that can win Stanley Cups. And I wouldn't put them among the elite goaltenders, but boy, they can play in the postseason. I wouldn't worry about it if I'm a Ranger fan. It's not something you have to address until the end of next season, but I don't think I'm going to be paying him outrageous amounts of money unless this hot streak that he's on continues through these playoffs and into next year and can make it very interesting. Adam says they showed this stat on the broadcast and it really highlights how bad of a problem scoring first has been for the Rangers. The graphic of the Devils, fewest games scoring first. The NHL, the Devils, 16 times they've scored first. That's by far the worst in the NHL. The Sharks, 22, are second. Sabres, Ducks, Coyotes at 23. All non-playoff teams, right? Even though it's easier to score now and leads are not as safe as they used to be, scoring first is still kind of a big deal. And if you're sitting here 50-plus games into the season, Anthony, and you've only scored first 16 times, that's a major problem that you've got to try to overcome. Now, luckily, they're among the teams, Rangers as well, with the most come-from-behind victories, but that's just the byproduct of your spotting a team with one-goal lead, and it's 75% of the time.
Yeah, I think it speaks more to their defensive and goaltending issues than their offensive deficiencies. Obviously, this is a team that has a lot of offensive talent at the top of their roster, but if you aren't able to prevent goals from going in the back of your net, you're not going to be able to score first. Sometimes those stats, I'm not saying it's a misleading stat. Obviously, the Devils have not played as well as they can this year. But more often than not, I tend to look down and see that the Devils have given up a goal within the first 5 minutes of a game. I have no doubt that it has nothing to do with Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier's ability, and more the fact that they don't have Dougie Hamilton, they don't have a goaltender. And that puts you behind the eight ball, and that's tough for a young team that you can kind of zero in on as an opposing team, to zero in on that top line and then just let the other guys beat you. Timo Meier hasn't been as advertised and is at the present moment not worth the money they paid. It's a lot easier to play from ahead than come from behind. So despite as many come from behind wins the Devils have, again, speaking to how good their offense is, the real issues for this team, as we've mentioned for the last few, like 2-3 months, are the defense and the goaltending.
All right, let's see here. A lot of people asking questions that we've already touched on, like what are the Rangers going to go after at the deadline?
Every single former Ranger. Ryan Strom, Pavel Buchnevich, Vladimir Tarasenko, Matt Zuccarello, Frank Vetrano. Am I missing anybody?
No, you got them all. The man which says, who do you think are the most underrated players in the game, or players that don't get enough love around the league?
Interesting question.
That's a really good question, because we're so close to it that there's not a lot of players that fly under our radar to know whether they get enough love or not.
Because we're just so good.
So you kind of just because we know all the players, we follow it, you know, but you know who's getting national attention we may not pay attention to.
Well, look, people again, and Don, this could be us again. I'm trying to think from the casual fan. I'm not just saying casual fan, local fan that doesn't look at the entire league, that doesn't have ESPN Plus, that isn't texting in the middle of the night going, Don, did you see that goal in the Toronto game? I think that when you take a look at the top players on teams, you know them. I think William Nylander, who has 79 points and is sixth in the league in points with 31 goals, is underrated in the sense that everyone knows Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews. I know William Nylander's the third on that team. I'd say maybe him. I think Elias Pettersson kind of gets buried behind Hughes and Miller. On that Vancouver team,
right.
You know, I think everybody knows this. I would hope. I think Sam Reinhart's amazing, and it's one of the main reasons Florida's as good as they are this year. You know, I'm just taking a look at the top point scorers in the league and thinking, who are guys that people don't know?
The first thing you got to do is you got to look at the teams that maybe are underappreciated, that people don't pay attention to. Like Kyle Connor, to me, is a very underrated player. I think he's a star, but he's in Winnipeg. Doesn't have those eye-popping highlights, but is a consistent goal scorer, consistent point producer. And I think he gets lost sometimes, you know, when Line A was there, and then obviously now with Scheifele and Hullabuck. But I think Kyle Connor would be underrated, even though he's won a Stanley Cup, and people, you know, people don't give, I think, Marchessault enough credit. I mean, he's a consistent 30 goal scorer. He's got 32 goals this year. He's got to probably finish with 40. I think he's a stud. Another guy that might not get a lot of consideration because hasn't spent a lot of time in the playoffs. People don't pay a lot of attention to him. They're kind of generic. We even kind of joke about him. Is Kaprizov in Minnesota.
Yep.
You know, and I don't know if people realize just how amazing he is as a player.
Kirill the Thrill.
Or Sebastian Aho in Carolina. Svechnikov as well. That's not a team that's known for their offense. Now, I think people that root for a team in the Metropolitan Division probably recognize those people. I mean, is Braden Point underrated? I think he gets obscured sometimes by Stamkos and Kucherov, but, you know, he's a terrific, terrific player.
This is going to sound really dumb, Don, but having the NHL game that has now evolved since you've played on the Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
I play the Ultimate Team version of it, where you can kind of build your own team, and every card has a rating. So you kind of see how the community and the league view players based on that rating. And you take a look at guys like Point and Kaprizov, and they're all like, you're like, wow, this guy's an 88 overall, which is pretty high in the game overall. You're like, how are these guys 88s overall? It's like, well, they're really good. And unfortunately, for this league, which is something they have to do a better job of, and I think they are with ESPN and TNT, showcasing the original six teams and the teams that are playing very well and that have the number one stars, they're really good at. But when you take a look at teams like Carolina, who are in a metro division that has a lot of big markets in it, and you take a look at a team like you mentioned, like Minnesota, who in Minnesota they're big, but around the country, are people tuning into Minnesota games? No, but I like Matt Boldy. Kirill Kaprizov is amazing. Like, you know, if you watch the league, you know there's so much talent out there.
And I know another one that you may disagree with because everybody knows his name, but probably doesn't get as much appreciation as he should, is Brady Tkachuk. You know, Matthew gets a lot because he's in Florida now and played in the Stanley Cup final, but I think Brady might be a better player overall, but he's in Ottawa. And he's up in Canada, and it's not a playoff team, but, you know, Brady's a complete player. He's got 50 points already this season on a team that's not really going anywhere. And you know, Stutzla's a nice player. Batherson's a nice player. But, you know, so there's a lot of guys as you start to really dig deep and you find them that are probably underappreciated. But a lot of times it's just because they don't play on a team that's any good or don't play on a big market, don't spend a lot of time on national television. But if you love the league and you follow the league, you know, you recognize these players and their abilities for sure. Only a couple of games tonight. Both are interesting. Rangers and Blue Jackets. The Blue Jackets have been a pain in the Rangers' ass. Okay.
They really have.
They've played three times. The Rangers lost both games in Columbus by two goals. The first one was the second game of the season, 5-3. And then the one on Sunday, I called them both. So maybe I'm a jinx there. And the game at the Garden, Rangers had to come back from like two goals down. Lafreniere scored with like 11 seconds left to force overtime. And then he had the game winner in the shootout. So it's been tough. So anybody just thinks this is going to be a layup, but I think a lot of people are going to see, will there be Olivier Rempe part two? I just hope for Rempe's standpoint of just constantly fighting, and especially with the possibility of Reeves on Saturday, it's got to end somewhere.
Have you looked at his eye? I don't know if he's in any, not that he's not in any condition. Of course you could play.
Right.
But I don't know if he's in the mood to get punched in the face.
And listen, for somebody that apparently he was the one that initiated the fight with Olivier, does he feel like he wants, does he want the rematch because of what happened? But you're like, if the eye's sore, I think he just needs to take a break. So, but that makes that game interesting. And Blues and Oilers, both these teams need it. Oilers trying to hang on, hold off the Kings for third in the Pacific. Starting to get away from the Blues here just a little bit. Second of back-to-backs, always interesting. So I'm looking because the Blues lost to the Jets. So that whole Winnipeg to Edmonton's not exactly around the corner either. So if I'm a betting man, and you already look at the numbers, it's -265 for the Oilers tonight. So I would not touch that game. I think the Oilers are going to win that game. But I would consider, Anthony, that +200 for the Blue Jackets, just based on recent vintage, might not be a bad bet.
Well, look, and everybody can do what they want responsibly, of course, on ESPN Bet or wherever you bet. I tend to not bet against my team. And I very rarely bet for my team, unless it's like anytime goal scorer, which I did for Artemi Panarin, and that made me some nice money over the weekend, because he always seems to score against the Blue Jackets. I don't think you're wrong, Don. I don't know. Sometimes it's weird. Everyone has those weird things, like those years before the Rays were good, when the Yankees just couldn't win in Tampa, and this was before they were good, where they just couldn't win, and it was just head-scratching as to how is it possible that they can't beat this team. For some reason, the young talent, that Russian line that Columbus rolls out, Merzlikin's playing out of his mind, the Rangers against lesser opponents, I'll call them, or opponents that aren't as good, and Peter Laviolette would hate me saying that because he always talks about every team can beat anybody on any given night. They seem to do that hero hockey where they do the cross-ice passes and the stretch passes, and they think that, I'm going to score these amazing goals because we just have more talent, which gets them into trouble on the defensive side. It was probably Miller and Trouba's worst game in probably 2 months over the weekend.
Well, Trouba almost was a -4.
Yeah.
They took away one because they ended up ruling that first goal on the power play, but originally was even straight. No, he was awful. Two penalties.
Both he and Miller pinched up in that game, and you were calling the game, Don, so you saw it.
Yeah.
Both pinched up when they really shouldn't have or weren't. It was less than a 50-50 chance they were going to get to that puck, and it led to two-on-ones, which led to goals. So, I don't think you're wrong. I think that
I
want to throw a flyer on something.
I'm the same way as you. I encourage people to bet in that way. I'm just saying the +200 for a team that has
their number is nice value.
They've picked up five of a possible 6 points against the Rangers already this year. So why wouldn't you consider it a +200?
Look, the Rangers seem to do a good job of correcting things when they do things wrong against a team. We've seen that a lot this year. Mm. And this is literally back-to-back, literally, and they've had 2 days to kind of fix things. I envision that this is going to be a much tighter game. I envision that this is going to be a more offensively structured game for the Rangers, where they're going to do their best to stay within their structure, and hopefully we see some goals 5-on-5 from Kreider and Zibanejad, because I don't know if you've seen this, Don, on social media and otherwise, it's getting very loud that they are not contributing 5-on-5 the way they should be.
Well, you're right, and you've talked many a time about breaking them up.
I don't hate the idea. I really don't.
Well, now they're trying Kako again up there on the top line. They tried VC. Now they're going to try to go back to Kako, see if that works. But let's do this again on Friday. Friday we will have our top five of the week. Always looking forward to that. Want to hear from you at Don LaGreca, at Anthony Pusick, hashtag Game Misconduct. We'll talk to you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.